Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm Ryan Smithy, joined this morning with Chip Horton.
Good morning.
And we are certainly thankful that you have joined us. Thankful for those that are hopping in with us on the chat box, on the website. Certainly encourage you to do so. Not only encourages us, as we know that you're there listening, but also maybe we say something that sparks a thought, a question in your mind, and you would have that opportunity to ask that or post that, and we'll try to deal with that even as we go along this morning. Well, it was a little bit of a dreary day this morning. Certainly have those in prayer as storms are sweeping through Texas and indeed even other places. So we want to keep those in mind, but we're thankful for that rain. We are going to be in Leviticus chapter 16 this morning, and we have a great challenge ahead of us, not just in the amount of material. We have about eight chapters, I believe, this morning, 16 to 23, but also the content of those chapters. Some great themes that are dealt with throughout, and so we're going to try to handle those in a good manner, and by necessity, we'll have to move rapidly, but we certainly want to try to deal with some of those great themes. And I believe one aptly described these chapters as the laws of holiness. And certainly as you look through here, there's a reminder of what God expected of his people, what he wanted of his people, as that reminder to follow him. And we'll even deal with that theme, hopefully, as we go through this morning. But we start in chapter 16 and maybe spend a good portion of our time here, because this was really the focal point in some ways, I believe, of the sacrificial system. You had sacrifices that were offered daily. You had sacrifices that were offered on special occasions. You know, all of these regulations are coming about, but there's one day that they all centered around, and that's the Day of Atonement. That we read about in Leviticus chapter 16. It's that day that the high priest would enter in into the most holy place and there carry out the instructions of God for the explicit purpose of, if you will, covering over those sins of himself, of the people, of the nation as a whole, that they could continue to enjoy fellowship with God. And two themes especially continue to come to mind throughout the book of Leviticus. Maybe others come to mind, but I think about, of course, the holiness of God. We are reminded that coming before God is nothing to be taken lightly. We see it in Leviticus chapter 10 with Nadab and Abihu. Don't take this lightly. We see it throughout all of these regulations. When you come before me, there are certain washing regulations, certain cleansing regulations, there are certain garments you're going to wear. And even here in this chapter, we find you're not just going to come before me whenever you want either. There is a time that is going to be set forth. And Chip, you might kick us off, if you don't mind, Leviticus chapter 16. And let's just grab verse 1 and 2 there to start this thought.
All right. And the Lord spake unto Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered before the Lord and died. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he come not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not. For I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat.
Okay. And so that was, again, part of that thought. Remember, one of the things we're learning in the book of Leviticus is if you're going to come before a holy God, we're going to do so on his terms.
Right.
And that's what we see even here. And you could continue there as you go on, verse 3, verse 4. He gives regulations as far as what animals were going to be offered that day. There are certain regulations concerning the garments that they're going to wear on that day. It's kind of significant, I believe. They put off their normal garments that were in many ways flashier, fancier, and put on plain, simple, white garments for this day. But all of these were in that regulation again. If you're going to come before me, you're going to follow these instructions that I've set forth. Because, again, we're seeing the holiness of God. But then, too, I think we see throughout this book, as I've described it, trying to paraphrase in some ways the book of Romans, the sinfulness of sin, the reason for this day, that the law is also pointing out all of these things of uncleanness, all of these things of sin, all of these shortcomings, and a reason for the need of these sacrifices. And so they're going to see time and again that their sin has separated or has the potential there to separate them from God. And so now we need this atonement. We need to be brought back. We need the forgiveness of God. And ultimately, all of those things are pointing forward to something even greater. And you see that through all of this imagery that we're looking forward to Jesus the Christ. I'm thankful as I read through the book of Leviticus that we're not still having rivers of blood that are shed from these sacrifices. I'm thankful there's not this continual reminder year after year and even day after day of this sin. I'm thankful for what we have in Christ, and yet at the same time, let us think back and remember sin still had its same effect even today. Sin separates from God. Sin, the wages of which is death, Romans 6, verse 23. But God paid the price, and God made that offering that would last throughout it, time as it stands here on this earth, that we can be cleansed in Jesus Christ. And so I think there ought to be a greater appreciation for what we have as New Testament Christians when we come away from the study of the book of Leviticus. And so kind of with some of those thoughts before us, I want to think just for a moment about this day of atonement. I mentioned to Chip, I think we could spend the hour easy just here in chapter 16. But here was, again, I think in many ways the highlight, the focal point of their sacrificial system as they were going through. It would occur on the 10th day of the 7th month in the month of Tishri, if I'm pronouncing that right. And I believe, as what others tell me, this would fall about our October time frame. Their calendar, as I understand it, would shift a little with more than ours, but around that October time frame. And it was this Day of Atonement, meaning to cover. Again, that Hebrew word kofar is what I'm going to take a guess at, but it meant to cover. And I think some of the interesting uses that were pointed out is Genesis 6 and verse 14. Noah covered the ark within and without with pitch. In many ways, that's what they are doing here with these blood sacrifices, these sacrifices that God had instructed to them. And so we have that idea of covering. Ultimately, it's used in this idea of pardon, mercy, forgiveness, reconciliation, are just some words there that we could throw out. And so how can a man who has committed sin come before a righteous God? Well, he's going to have to find atonement. And man cannot dictate the terms with which he's going to approach a holy God. But God can. And so he's setting forth this system whereby they can approach unto him and have their sins, as it were at this time, symbolically covered and symbolically carried away. And so there's a lot of details given throughout this chapter concerning how they are to conduct themselves for this day of atonement, in which the high priest would offer sacrifices as an atonement for the sanctuary, for himself, for the sins that he had committed, for the people, and even and indeed all of the priests. And so it was a day of fasting, As I understand, again, it was the only fast that was actually commanded by law, in the law. And so here was a day that it gets attached with the feast days that we'll talk about later in chapter 23, but this really was not a feasting day. It was a fasting day. But it made it special in the minds of the people. Here is something that we're going to pay attention to. Here is something that we need to prepare ourselves for. Here is something that, again, to use that phrase again and again, we're not going to take this lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the principles that I think we can learn from the Day of Atonement is sin doesn't just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Sin had to be covered. And here was God prescribing how that was to be done. When we look around in our world today, we need to remember that just because time has passed or just because maybe man has forgiven us for something that we have done, have we turned to God? Have we got asked forgiveness from him? After all sin is against God.
Mm-hmm.
And time does not simply erase that. And so we have to ask, how can I approach unto a holy God? Well, for us, I don't have to turn to these sacrifices of bulls and goats, but I do have to turn unto the one who would offer himself for us, our high priest. And we'll talk again as we move along. The book of Hebrews is certainly a companion here, mm-hmm. To the book of Leviticus in these offerings. You know, there are a lot of details here that we could go through, but you begin looking, and here we're finding, even as we've read in verse 1 and 2, that, again, the priest is going to come at a prescribed time. He's going to come in a prescribed manner. He's going to even enter into that most holy place. It was here that you had the Ark of the Covenant. It was here that you had the mercy seat with those angels that were stretched out with their wings there. It was the place that represented the very presence of God among his people.
Mm-hmm.
And they would enter into the holy place. They would come on that day. Again, you keep reading verse 3 through 5. He's going to have five prescribed animals that were selected from among the people. A bullock, two rams, two male goats. The bullock and the ram were going to be a sin offering and a burnt offering. The other animals were additional offerings, and one of the goats was even going to be, as we call it, the scapegoat,
mm-hmm.
the one that was going to be sent forth into to the wilderness. And so he was, as it were, you have the covering of sins and you have the dispatching of sins as that animal was sent away. You have the garments that are going to be worn in verse 4. They were to wash their body and to put on these special robes here that were going to be, again, basic. But here you have the priest that's going to be dressed in the pure white color that maybe best represents the holiness here with which man must approach unto a holy God.
That's right.
By which God is, again, giving this prescription how it can be done.
Talking about that prescription, you know, it's, I can't help but think back to, I'm kind of prepping, as it were, to teach Exodus, mm-hmm. and a lot of things keep popping up in my head because of that. But, you know, over and again, God told Moses and Aaron to tell Pharaoh, let my children go, let my people go, that they may serve me.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have this, you know, this is obviously a continuation of the book of Exodus, but aren't you glad that he gave us specific instructions?
Mm.
He gave, if you can look through this and tell me somehow or another that you think it's not specific and detailed, I'd like to have a discussion with you.
Right.
Because this is absolutely detailed down to, you know, down to the shoelace, if you will. And, you know, I'm reminded of the same way that we are instructed in the New Testament. You know, Hebrews over and again tells us of the better covenant, the better mediator, the better, you know, mm-hmm. oh, better, better, better. And we are instructed in a very detailed manner as well. I know y'all talked about Nadab and Abihu yesterday and deviating from the pattern, deviating from these instructions. And as you see, even here in this particular covenant, you know, there's problems when you step away from the pattern. And so I'm glad that he has left us this pattern. And the only way, I was looking back at the concordance a minute ago, holiness shows up 87 times just in this one book. And so how do I approach a holy God? I, too, must be holy. And that word that you have mentioned again, atonement, is very easily understood as you break it down, you know, on a third grade level. It's at one meant. Mm-hmm. And so in order to approach God, we must be at one. Amos 3:3, you know, can two walk together except they be agreed? We have to be holy as he is holy, which is, again, Leviticus 14, 19, 22, I think. Again, we are commanded to be holy. And so how do we approach this holy God? Well, we must be at one. We must be holy as he is holy. We must be on that holy plane as he is. Mm-hmm. Just so many thoughts that rushed to my head, but I continue to look back to Exodus, and this is how we serve God.
Mm-hmm. And then I've said it, I think, every time I've talked about the book of Leviticus now. But as one described, Exodus is getting the people of Israel out of Egypt, and Leviticus is about getting Egypt out of the people.
And, oh, yeah,
and
I like that.
In some ways, that's what the New Testament's still doing for us. Here's how you get the world out of you now that you've come out of the world. Mm. Dedicating yourself unto God, recognizing he's not just one of the idols that were served in Egypt. He's not one that you make up and you decide how you're going to serve, and you're going to decide what he desires. Here is the one true and living God that you're going to approach according to his pattern and his plan. And there's a lot of detail throughout these books, but it is that reminder again, God was detailed, God was specific. There were areas he left open, but there were areas he was very specific with at the same time, and how they were to live and to worship. Mm-hmm. Again, you have the priest on this day. He is offering both for himself. We're reminded of that in verse 6, that he was to offer one of the bullocks for him and for his house. Remember the Hebrew writer in Hebrews 9 and verse 7. It says, into the second, that's the most holy place, went the high priest alone once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and the heirs of the people. We might be able to make mention here, the priest of the Old Testament, specifically this high priest, let's remember he was just a man. Mm-hmm. And he was guilty of sin as well. Even as priests today, we need to remember that we are not perfect. We have shortcomings. We're reminded of passages like Matthew 7 and verse 5. You cast out the mote out of your own eye before getting that little speck out of your brother's eye. Here they were recognizing their own sin and the sins of the people. Again, that just highlights for us, as you get over into the book of Romans, we now serve a high priest that had no sin. So how much better a high priest, how much better a sacrifice? Well, we have this guiltless one. Mm-hmm. In verse 7 through 10, you have the idea presented there of the scapegoat. You had these two goats, and it was, as it was, a lot with these stones to draw forth and to see which one is going to be offered as a sacrifice, which one is going to be the scapegoat. The word Azazel is how I'm going to again pronounce that. And the idea here of the one who is a remover of sins. Mm-hmm. It was figuratively going to be placed upon him, upon the head of that animal, and he's going to be sent away into the wilderness, never to return again. And you have some wonderful images there of sin as far as the offering unto God, but also that removal of sin. Mm-hmm. This has departed from us. And I think even greater terms are found in the New Testament as far as I will remove your sin from you. Mm-hmm. But it is a beautiful image there of the goat that is carrying away. He has become the one that would bear those sins. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is going to come along, and he's going to be a fulfillment of all of these images. Right. He's the one that's going to be carried outside of the city. He's the one that's going to be taken out for a sacrifice. And so he's fulfilling both the idea of one who is a sacrifice, who's offering his blood, but also the one that's carrying away, that's bearing the burden of sin, not of his own, but for us.
Sounds like Isaiah 53.
And indeed, that whole, again, that's a chapter in and of itself to study, but Isaiah 53, the suffering servant, the one who, not for himself, but for us. Again, there's detail. I wish we could slow down and spend more time, but the atonement ceremony itself, verse 11 through 13, the Aaron or the high priest would enter and into the most holy place. He would burn incense to cover the cherubim of the Ark of Mercy. Two ideas there have been presented, both of which seem to have some merit. Is the incense burned with that smoke to shield the priest from what the cherubim represented, the very presence of God, so that he would not encounter God in that way? It's a possibility. Is it rather, as I believe it was Kylan DeLitch that offered the idea, that it's a symbolic covering of our prayers before God, that are rising up before him for mercy, for forgiveness, that God would accept these offerings that are being given on this day for the high priest and for the people? And certainly, again, I think both of those are possibilities, but he would enter in, he would burn this incense, that it would fill that area, cover those cherubim, and then he would come in and offer the blood, sprinkling of blood upon the mercy seat, verse 14 through 19. He did this seven times as far as the sprinkling of the blood on the mercy seat. Seven, so oftentimes representing a perfect or a complete number, even here attached to the idea of atonement. One of the things that brings to mind is remembering this is happening year after year after year. And it was that reminder, Israel had to maintain its fellowship with God. And so there was this continual cleansing, even of this blood offering. That brings to my mind 1 John chapter 1. 1 John chapter 1, that we are to walk in the light as he is in the light. And now we have the blood of Jesus Christ that continually cleanses us from our sin. Here was a blood offering that they would make once a year as that continual reminder. And yet for us as Christians today, we have that continual cleansing in the blood of Christ as we walk with him, as we remain faithful to him. And yet here was a concept that God was trying to get in the minds and the ideas of Israel.
And here it is in verse 16, that's the gigantic problem. Because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel, because of their transgressions, right? And that would come up again, even as, you know, this condemnation would come down on Judah, you know, Isaiah 59, you know, over and again, you know, you have continued in this, you know. And so just as we go back to Genesis 3 and see the entrance of sin, we see this problem here, and it has to be covered, it has to be removed, it's a problem. Men continually dabbling in this, and then ultimately the Christ would be sent to wash us of our sins. Sin is a gigantic problem, and they're dealing with it here. How to cover it? How to remove it?
Indeed, and random thought came to mind there as you were talking about that event, and I'm thinking we're here roughly 1,400 years before the Christ at this time. If they had done as they should have, which was not always the case, I stop and I think these are events that should have been carried out some 1,400 times before the coming of Christ. And so God is being detailed. He's being specific. He's given these things that they might know them. Following his entrance into the most holy place. Then he would release the scapegoat into the wilderness, verse 20 through 22. And then, verse 23 and verse 24, he returns to the tabernacle, removes those white linen garments, and he is once again going to wash and put on his regularly priestly apparel. Mm. And so here again, you talk about some of this preparation. The people were to be fasting. The priests here were to come, and they were to put off their regular priestly garments, wash themselves, prepare themselves, put on these white linen garments to represent that holiness of that day, to do these sacrifices, and then once again take off those clothing, wash, and put back on their regularly priestly attire. And so that they would do year after year. Then there's additional detail here concerning what they're going to do. What they're going to do concerning the remains, if you will. And there was the fat that was to be burned on the altar. And also, the one was to take... the scapegoat into the wilderness. He was to wash upon his return, verse 26. The unused blood and remains of the bull and goat offerings were to be taken outside of the camp and burned, verse 27. And again, that one that had burned the animal was to wash his clothes and his body. And so here God had a command, even for the leftovers, if you will. There was nothing to be just thrown out. There was nothing to be just disregarded. Mm-hmm. And that in itself becomes interesting, because now you have these offerings, and they say, take the remains outside of the camp and burn them. Well, the Hebrew writer is going to make an application of that in Hebrews 13 and verse 11, mm-hmm. where Jesus was taken outside of the camp. He was taken outside of the city, and there he was going to be offered. And so in many ways, you know, here is that which had become a something that almost was looked down on. Certainly there was shame attached with that, and yet Jesus was going to be taken outside of the city and there offered. A reminder there, not just of his physical hardships, but the humiliation of his crucifixion. Mm. And verse 19 through 29 through 34 is going to deal with some of the ideas of the nation as a whole. The day upon which they were to offer it. It's interesting here, it mentions they are to afflict their souls and cease from their labors. Mm-hmm. Again, we have the idea here of a people that have come together, they have stopped all of their work, mm-hmm. except for, of course, the priests that are offering mm-hmm. on this occasion, and to have this period of fasting from the evening of the ninth to the evening of the tenth day. And here... the idea that they needed to be thinking about what was being done for them. Mm-hmm. You know, even as Christians, we have opportunity upon the first day of the week. What do? We stop and we need to reflect. We need to think about the sacrifice that has been given on our behalf. And so there's a lot more detail there in chapter 16, but I think it helps us get an idea of the importance there of that Day of Atonement, in which the people are reminded of their sin, of their unrighteousness, and yet here's the opportunity to come before God as a holy people. Mm-hmm. Here's the opportunity that they can enjoy fellowship with God by the means, by the prescription, if you will, that he has set forth. And I'm going to crown that and then give Chip here a few minutes, but Hebrews 9 and verse 12, there the idea that Christ has come as this greater high priest, not with the blood of bulls and goats, but now rather he has come with his own blood and made redemption for us. Not, the Hebrew writer says there in Hebrews 9 and verse 12, neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. Here, once and for all, Jesus made a sinless sacrifice that we can enjoy the forgiveness of sin, something that at this time in the book of Leviticus, they can only look forward to in prospect. Mm. And it's pointing them forward to something better. As we look back, we're reminded we have that which is better. And so a lot of lessons. Maybe there's something you want to highlight or point out there, Chip.
Well, the thing that continues to smack me in the face is the way that the priest was to present himself. Mm-hmm. The process through which he would go in order to present himself even for the people. And as, you know, Peter reminds us, that's us. We are a royal priesthood, you know. We are a holy people. And so shouldn't we see the parallel between the old and the new, the types, the antitypes, the shadows, and all these things that have been given to us by inspiration? And, you know, we should be troubled, you know, by the way that so many people in the world today present themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not just the physical. But there was an emphasis on the physical here. You wash, you rewash, you know, you clean your clothes, you change your clothes, you put on a different garment. And I notice as he, you know, comes in contact with the sin for the people and the scapegoat, and you see the dirtiness of sin, you see that which has to be continually cleansed. You know, that which is dirty is outside of the camp. Mm-hmm. You know, the lepers, the bloody issues, all those things, they can't be in the camp. And so I'm wondering, you know, how do I prepare to present myself on that blessed Sunday morning when I come into the assembly room with other priests? Mm-hmm. You know, do I put on the same old overalls that I was working in the yard with yesterday? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean... You know, we don't want to have, you know, an overbearing thought about just the physical. But if we're under a better covenant, I mean, is there any misunderstanding in how I should maybe dress better? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I've been accused of this being a hobby horse of mine. I don't know that that's true. I hope it's not. But I see that so many places, you know, that someone will enter into a funeral home and have a fine set of clothes on. But then, you know, and that's for the honor of a dead person. And then when we come in to serve a living God, one that is raised from the dead, never to die again, you know, we're dressed in rags. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if that's some sort of a reflection of what, you know, is on the inside of us. Mm-hmm. Because if we are to reflect even, you know, this adornment that Peter would talk about, this adornment of the inward person, shouldn't it be reflected on the outside? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it seems that the farther we go, the more technologically advanced we become. You know, you see casual Thursdays, casual Fridays at work, and I'm afraid we've gotten off into casual Sundays. Mm-hmm. I mean, after all, it's my day off. It's a weekend. I shouldn't have to prepare. I'm consistently seeing here, God expects my very best, you know. Mm-hmm. If I'm supposed to give of the first fruits, it seems like I should give of the first fruits even today. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, you know, prepare, you know, with a fine suit of clothing, you know, I don't know. I hate to get too far off into that, but I just continue to see this here,
right?
You know,
and I certainly agree that you've got this idea of attention and detail and care, thought that's being taken to all of this, and what one thing that impresses me in chapter 16 there is even the idea the whole nation needs to be active in this. Now, they can't all gather around the door of the tabernacle. They can't all enter into the most holy place, number one. They're not all priests, but they're simply not going to fit. But that doesn't exclude you. You were at home. You were prepared. You made your preparations. You are in thought about this. You are fasting, even as the priest is carrying out these sacrifices. And so there was an involvement of all people in this event, and certainly something that they gave thought and attention to, and certainly some great lessons there.
Chris said that this really points out the need of preparation and cleansing of the inner man for New Testament worship, and less than total preparation of the inner man for worship seems to make common our worship. So I appreciate Chris chiming in
good
there.
Good thoughts, good thoughts. Well, you know, as I said, I think we deal on a lot of these chapters, and I feel we've left them inadequately covered. I know that's the case. There is so much there, and we could talk about the regulations of the Day of Atonement. We could talk about the thematic elements of the Day of Atonement and how they represent forgiveness and atonement, how we could go into the New Testament and make all kinds of application, especially as they pointed to the Christ, the type and antitypes. But hopefully that has maybe whetted our appetite to go and delve into that a little more and learn even more. But we do need to move on. And attached here again with this idea of holiness, this is something that we have seen really, even though maybe it's not directly highlighted, we've seen going all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, the sacrifice of blood. And already as we come into the book of Exodus and Leviticus and we start talking about the law, we're going to find the blood is going to serve a big part.
That's right.
And so with that idea in mind, chapter 17 becomes very important. Again, a chapter we can't give the due diligence to, but we find out even more about the blood offerings here. And what we find throughout not just this chapter, but throughout all of the law and its regulations here, is blood is precious. Mm. Blood is precious. Just think of 1 Peter 1, verse 18 and 19. For as much as you know that you were not redeemed with corruptible things, as silver and gold, from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb, without blemish and without spot. Mm. Here, what was the price for our salvation but the blood of God's own Son? And so we have been taught time and again the importance and the significance of these blood offerings. Hebrews 9 and verse 22 is going to remind us, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. You didn't talk about forgiveness of sin. Right. It's going to take the shedding of blood. And so here throughout these Old Testament offerings, we see time and again this focus on those blood offerings. And so some regulations are going to be given in verse 1 through 9 concerning sacrifices involving blood. There are going to be prohibitions against eating blood in verse 10 through 12. And there's going to be instructions involving blood from animals killed or found dead in verse 13 through 16, treated a little differently. But I would highlight, underline, circle, put flashing lights around, make as a key to this chapter, Leviticus 17 and verse 11, in fact, a principle to the whole of this sacrificial system. Here is God is going to say through Moses, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. And I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. There's the importance of blood.
That's right.
And so here were, again, these instructions that were given. Don't take lightly the preciousness of life. Don't take lightly the preciousness of blood. And so as you're dealing even in those sacrifices, you needed to take care and attention to how you treated it and follow these instructions. Then we see again there in verse 10 through 12, that prohibition against eating the blood because that life is in the blood. Here is that which is so essential to life that it's going to be associated here with life itself. You drain a body of its blood, you drain it of its life. And so it is considered sanctified in that same sense that life itself is sanctified. It's that which has been given by God. And so there is special treatment here throughout all of the symbolism of blood. In fact, we'll point out that even as you come into the New Testament, this is one of those regulations that's going to continue in the sense that it was pointed out, Acts chapter 15 and verse 9, instead of binding the law upon the Gentile Christians, remember that they wrote and said, well, they should abstain from meats offered unto idols, they should abstain from blood and from things strangled and from fornication. And so that's a decree there that in that sense is carried forth. You still have a respect unto life. We still have a respect unto blood there. And I think we look back and understand here we don't see blood in the same way that they did. I mean, blood covered everything that they did. It covered the tabernacle. It covered their offerings. It was a part of everything they did. And yet now we're somewhat separated from that because we don't see those daily blood offerings, and yet Jesus has shed his blood for us. He has made that sacrifice again. The Hebrew writer points out he's made it once and for all. Again, you can look in Hebrews 8, 9, 10. It's not by the blood of bulls and calves, we read in Hebrews 9 and verse 12, but by his own blood. Mm-hmm. He entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. That was the price that was paid. Again, a lot of details there in chapter 17, but it all centers around that idea of the preciousness, the sanctity of life itself and of blood, particularly there as a means of atonement, mm-hmm. by which they were going to approach a holy God for the forgiveness of their sins. And I guess I would close maybe in that idea of again, 1 John 1, it's that blood of Christ that even continues to cleanse us from our sins. Mm-hmm. That blood was offered to cover the sins of the old as well as those going forward.
Yeah.
And again, didn't do it credit, but some ideas there from chapter 17.
Well, I mean, you can preach all day on the blood, and just a couple of things that popped up in my mind. You know, I think it was back in Genesis 9, the emphasis on the man that sheds another man's blood, you know, mm-hmm. that goes a long way back, you know, and we think about, you know, Cain and Abel in that particular situation and how God is greatly offended in the shedding of blood. You look at the idea of abortion, lots of things that go along with the idea of shedding blood. It's been a mandate for, you know, thousands of years now. Mm. You know, you just don't shed another man's blood. In the Minor Prophets, I remember a study that we had not too terribly long ago, that there's a lot of mention of the streets being filled with blood. Blood was on people's hands for the way that they treated one another. You know, God thinks a lot about blood, and so by the time you come over and you see verses, you know, like Acts 20 and verse 28, the church that was purchased with the blood of Jesus. You think about Revelation 1:5, we're washed in his blood. Mm-hmm. So many different things come up that blood is terribly important. If you type it into a concordance somewhere, you'll find out that some 375 times, 375 verses rather, in the Bible have a mention of blood in it. So mm-hmm. it's something that is mentioned over and again, whether negative or positive. It's in there continuously. Mm-hmm. So great attention should be paid to blood. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, just as the Day of Atonement was the center of their yearly sacrifices, blood was going to be the center of everything in many ways that they did, from the sanctification of the tabernacle to the offerings that they would give day by day, and even in those yearly sacrifices. And so blood is dealt with extensively there in chapter 17. Immorality, and particularly heathen immorality, is going to be addressed in chapter 18 as God was trying to make Israel a special people. I've called you out. I don't want you to be like the nations around you. I don't want you to be like Egypt. I don't want you to be like Canaan. Into the land that you're going. Mm-hmm. And so there's regulations concerning their relationships with other people, concerning marriage with other people, concerning their worship with the heathen. And all of that was to maintain their relationship with their Creator. Mm-hmm. We might, if you don't mind, Chip, grab for us Leviticus 18. Let's go ahead and take the time to read verse 1 through 5.
All right. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God. after the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, ye shall not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall you walk in their ordinances. Ye shall not do my, shall do my judgments and keep mine ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord.
All right. Again, what's the very basis? The holiness of God.
Right.
You're going to follow these things because I want you to be like me, not like the nations that are around you. And so there are restrictions, again, concerning their idolatrous worship. There are restrictions concerning marriage and their sexual relationships and who they could be with, who they couldn't be with. There's going to be restrictions concerning even here the idea of extends to the prohibition against not just in marriage, but their homosexual marriage there in verse 22. And so a lot of detail ought to be spent here just in chapter 18 with those ideas of marriage. Unfortunately, we have an idea today that seems prevalent of, well, as long as I love somebody, they're eligible to be married together. Well, no. God had restrictions and had put them in place concerning what they were and were not to do. And again, that was to keep them holy. It was to keep them separate. And so they needed to honor and to follow those things.
And notice that as you go down through, thou shalt not, 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 you get down to verse 24, it says, defile not yourselves. And so if you do any of these things that are listed before, you had defiled yourself. And he is commanding us to be holy, and so do not be defiled like the people of the land that I cast out before you. Don't be like them. And so we bring that into the New Testament and be separate.
Again, don't want to fly through that chapter. Certainly encourage it to your reading and look at some of those restrictions and see that God had a pattern and a plan for his people. And a large part of that was to keep them separate from the people around them and to be holy. And that becomes a focus. Chapter 19 and 20 has been broken up, just the idea of sundry laws and prohibitions is how it was titled in one division there. They weren't unimportant. But here we're just a grouping of things. But I would highlight out of those chapters, verse 1 and 2 of chapter 19, if you're there for us, Chip.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say unto them, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.
Okay. What's the overshadowing principle throughout all of these laws and principles? You be holy as I am holy. Here they're coming before a sinless God. He has called them out. He's called them out to be separate. He says, I don't want you to be like what you see all around you. I want you to be like me. Ephesians 5 and verse 1 exhorts us to be imitators, followers of God as dear children. Don't be conformed to the world, but transformed by his will. Romans 12 verse 1 and 2. And this same principle that's going to come to us in 1 Peter 1 and verse 16, be holy as I am holy. That same exhortation is given unto us as New Testament Christians as it was to these that were receiving the law of Moses. And so that holiness was to permeate, I guess is the word I'm looking, permeate their lives in your dealings with others, in your attitudes, in the things that you do. Be holy. We see it in the sacrifices. We see it in the regulations of the home. We see it in the idea of the Godhead itself. Be holy and not follow after false idols and false gods. We see it in their love towards one another and those that are in need. We see it in their honesty and their dealings with other people. We see it in justice, as you're reading down through in verse 19. I mean, there's just all of these laws that all center around, I want you to be holy in all that you do, in the way that you deal with others. And so there's a lot of detail. that's given to these things on how they are to continue as a holy people and keeping things separate, keeping things in order, doing that which God would have them to do.
Right, and the way that we carry all these things out is based in verse number 18. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Mm-hmm. And so that that reflects even back to the Decalogue. You know, they said the first five commandments dealt with how to be, you know, holy before God, how to interact with God, how to reverence God. And then the second five have everything to do with how we interact one with another, how we are pleasing to God by loving our neighbor.
And there, that idea, what did Jesus say with the great commandments? That you love God and love your neighbor.
Right.
And, you know, are those things give them specifics. It gives them details. But that's how they're going to fulfill it. If they would do those two things, all of those others would fall into place. Then there's going to be more precepts for the priest. You know, chapter 19, chapter 20 deal with some of those relationships, even their worship and not turning into the idols of the land, and you know, keeping things separate. Chapter 21, chapter 22 deal with some regulations for the priests. And again, that understanding, it is an honor, it is a privilege, but it is an awesome responsibility to serve as a priest and come before the throne of God. And again, we would do well to remember that we are priests as the people of God today. And we need no less attention to detail, no less awe in our worship and our service to God. Here were the men, that tribe of Levi, and even more specifically the household of Aaron, that were coming before God, acknowledging the greatness of God and exalting him before the people. They were the ones that were going to set the tone for that nation. If they would remember the holiness and the sanctity of God and serve him in reverence, then that same attitude hopefully would be passed to the people. And so, again, dealing with the priest concerning, as you skim down through verse chapter 21, avoidance with contact with a dead body, avoiding heathen practices, the marriage of the priest and their families, restrictions concerning there, or regulations concerning the high priest. Move into chapter 22, and you have separation from ceremonial uncleanness, the rites of the priest to the holy things, the vows and the free will offerings. Again, all of those details that can summarize in chapter 22 and verse 31 right there at the end. And he said, keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. And so that's what they were to do. Hear, heed, follow the word that God has set forth. And then just briefly, chapter 23 is going to deal with laws concerning the feast. They had some seven specific times that could be addressed there. The idea of the Passover, the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Holy Harvest or the Harvest Festival. All of those things that were to be a reminder of what God had done for them. God has blessed you. God has kept you. God has protected you. God has richly increased you as you continue to walk with God. And so those were very special days that they were take attendance to. Again, each of them bore their own significance, and that would certainly be a worthwhile study. To look again at the regulations that were given and their meanings. But we are just about out of time. But those feasts would serve as a continual reminder to them. Don't forget God. Don't forget what he's given you. And as you go into Deuteronomy, that's going to become even more of a focal point, I think, in Moses' mind, that he knows, I'm about to leave you. And I know you're about to go into a land in which you're going to be richly blessed. don't forget God. If you will continue in the reading of his law, if you will continue in these feasts that have been prescribed, that you think back about what God has done for you as a people, as a nation, in the atonement and the forgiveness of sins, that you continue to enjoy in the crops and the blessings that he gives you day by day and year by year, then you will do well and not forget God. And so that was an importance, certainly, of those times. And so I went through some of that in pretty fast, but maybe something that you wanted to highlight or jumped out at you, Chip?
Well, I just looked down as you closed there and thought about the feast that, you know, we used to remember every first day of the week. And what a tragedy is in the religious world that so many people think, well, we just eat it quarterly, or we just eat it at Christmas or on Mother's Day or whatever. And what does that say? You know, I mean, we must go about the business of remembering. And that's what our feast every first day of the week is all about, remembering the death, burial, and resurrection.
Amen. Amen. And so wonderful ideas, again, concerning a lot of their sacrifices and a lot of their life. It was to center around God, and I would suggest to you it's no less true today. Paul would say, I'm crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. In the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And what a wonderful idea there as you transfer even some of these ideas into the New Testament and how richly we have been blessed and certainly deserves no less attention. With that, we will sign off. Certainly hope that you have a good and a safe day. Hope that you continue with us right here on the Gospel Radio Network. And Lord willing, be back with us again tomorrow morning with Chip and Richard as we continue beginning in Leviticus 24.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in his Word, let's remember his words in Luke 6:46, when he said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.